Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com 5 days a week. You really do need to be listening to this show 5 days a week. There is that much important information and interesting stuff being discussed on this show every single day of the week. And believe me when I tell you, when you get to the end of the week and there's like 10 hours of listening to catch up on because you were busy or something like that, it's really, really tough. So please, do your daily dose of conspiracy and comedy at the Vinnie Eastwood Show. com. All the archives are there after they're posted each day for those of you who cannot listen live. So we're going to go straight into it and bring up my guest, Penny Bright. Penny, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinnie. How are you?
Exposing scumbaggery as I do.
So busy, you will never die.
Allegedly. Allegedly. What have you got for us today, Penny?
Well, here's a handy hint to all your listeners. The concept of the rule of law, any issue, there is always going to be some underpinning bit of legislation that's supposed to cover how things are supposed to be done in a proper way. So the thing is to find out, well, what are the rules and regulations that are supposed to apply and are they being followed? Because, God help me, in so many cases, they just make it up. Well, the classic example of that, which is hot news today, is that the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff, Mr. Wayne Eagleson, is under serious fire because of his role in the in this huge fuss about the leaking of records, private records of a Fairfax journalist, Andrea Vance. And I just want to make it clear to people, because this is not widely known, the difference between the role of the Chief of Staff, who is attached to the Prime Minister's office, and the role of the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet. Because, in my considered opinion, this Mr. Wayne Eagleson should not have had anything to do with instructing anybody to do with matters relating to Andrea Vance. So the first point is this, that, see, I subscribe to parliamentary services where you can actually get the questions that are asked in the House, etc., and it's really handy because you can keep totally up to date with the Hansard record. And what happened on the 31st of July was David Shearer asked the Prime Minister, does he stand by his statement that, quote, when my chief of staff speaks to someone, they speak for me, John Key replied, yes. David Shearer, did his chief of staff ask Parliamentary Service for information on or records of phone calls from the Parliamentary Precinct as part of the Henry Review? John Key, quote, I think it's important for the record just to relay what my chief of staff did. So effectively, there are two things. Mr. Eagleson, who's the chief of staff, emailed the offices of the ministers who had received the report to inform them, that's the Kittredge report, that on my wishes they should comply with the inquiry. And secondly, on the 9th of May, he emailed Jeff Thorne at Parliamentary Services to confirm that I wished him to make available the inquiry records in relation to ministers and their staff. The key point here is, should Wayne Eagleson as chief of staff been involved in this at all? And my considered opinion is absolutely not. And the reason why I say this, and I'm taking this straight from the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, and people can check this out for themselves, www.dpmc.govt.nz/DPMC. Here we go. Administrative support to the Prime Minister. This includes preparations of replies to parliamentary questions and dealing with Official Information Act requests and other correspondence. A totally separate body, the Office of the Prime Minister also advises the Prime Minister. It is the primary point of responsibility for managing political issues and relationships with other political parties and for providing administrative and media support. Structure. The Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet formally came into existence on the 1st of January 1990 as a result of a report which recommended establishing structures to provide two separate streams of advice to the Prime Minister. One, a new government department to supply impartial, high-quality advice and support to the Prime Minister and Cabinet, DPMC, and another, a Prime Minister's private office, which is not part of the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, to provide personal support and media services and advice of a party political nature. So why is Wayne Eagleson, Chief of Staff of the Prime Minister's private office, being involved in these matters? End of story.
Can you elucidate on exactly why this is unlawful, Penny?
Well, it's just that there's two quite separate structures here. And again, it just seems that the propensity at the highest levels of this country where they just make it up. There are rules set for clear reasons and they're not being followed. And I believe myself that the Prime Minister's chief of staff, it's like his minder, his political minder, or arguably his spin doctor because he's dealing with the media, etc., at the highest levels should not be involved in advising ministers at this level. It's not his job. It's not his role. And what's happened is that this Jeff Thorne, who is the head or was the head of Parliamentary Services, he just resigned yesterday. He has fallen on his sword. But you've got this Chief of Staff, Wayne Eagleson, who's been the one who's been telling Parliamentary Services, like, I'm speaking on behalf of the Prime Ministers and what to do when. How was that his role? I think that Wayne Eagleson, he also should fall on his sword. He's not acting in a proper way. And that totally implicates John Key as well. I mean, when you're a former foreign exchange dealer or the head of derivatives for Merrill Lynch, where you do deals over the phone or do deals over dinner, that's how you do stuff. But it's no way to run a country. And in my considered opinion, John Key has brought his private sector ways with him, and he's not acting as a prime minister and following this top public service job.
Here's the problem. Yes. What's the difference between a country and a corporation these days? I think they're one and the same. So well, he's the perfect person to run it like a company.
Well, the fact of the matter is there are a whole stack of... it comes, again, back to the rule of law, in my view, and that, you know, like, if you don't know your rights, you haven't got any. But if you know their statutory duties and you know your rights, you've got them in a pincer movement, which makes it very difficult for them, because in so many cases, like I say, they're not following the rule of law themselves. And when you throw that back to them, throw it back in their face and demand they do their job in a proper way, then they're buggered, because who else is holding them to account? You see,
well, you know, it should be the media. It should be the media, but unfortunately, I saw this post by One News last night that John Key, and I wanted to get your comment on this, Penny. John Key says that there's Al-Qaeda in New Zealand, therefore we should pass the GCS bill and spy on all New Zealanders in order to protect us from the boogeyman. And dig this. This is the most interesting part. Every single comment, except one out of 156, oh, no, 250 comments. There was one comment that wasn't calling John Key out as a complete liar and exposing that Al-Qaeda was created by the CIA and is still working for them today.
Well, you have to ask yourself the convenience of this comment when there's only one vote in this, trying to pass this, the GCSB legislation. I mean, the bill's gone through its second reading now, but it's only on one vote. It's very touchy. I know that, given the heavyweights that have come out against it, that there's a lot of people that must feel very uncomfortable, even within the National Party, in my view. But just to play the terrorist card, well, hello. I mean, well, look at all the surveillance in the United States. It didn't stop the Boston bombings, did it? You know.
Well, that's because the surveillance isn't for protection of the people from terrorists. It's to protect the terrorist state from the people.
I think that's quite neatly put. In fact, I might pinch that. Very good. Exactly right. But back to the rather beleaguered Chief of Staff, Wayne Eagleson. You see, this is not the first time that I've found that he stepped into waters where he shouldn't be swimming, because I did an Official Information Act request back to the Prime Minister on the 5th of April this year, and I asked, how are you inducted or familiarised with your statutory duties arising from the Public Records Act? Because at the highest levels of this country, they're supposed to create and maintain full and accurate records so the public can have confidence. But then I discovered, to my horror, the Cabinet Manual, what they made reference to was only the need to store and dispose of records. So at the highest levels, as per the Cabinet Manual, the need to create records was not being enforced. And I have raised this issue because what you're having are serious matters, affairs of state, where the Prime Minister's meeting with ministers, meeting with all sorts of other very highly placed people. Nobody takes the minutes. And nobody seems to be able to remember the conversations. Well, that might be how you do things when you run Merrill Lynch, but that is no way to run a country. So I also outlined other key bits of legislation. I made the point that as New Zealand is perceived to be the least corrupt country in the world, that we arguably should be the most transparent. And arguably the laws, regulations and culture which apply in the private corporate world are not the same which should and do apply to the public sector of which you are now in charge as Prime Minister of New Zealand. May I respectfully remind you of the pivotal legislation which covers the public sector, public service, as outlined on the New Zealand State Services Commission website. The Crown Entities Act, 2004, the Human Rights Act, the New Zealand Bill of Rights Act, the Official Information Act, the Protected Disclosures Act, that's the Whistleblowers Act, Public Finance Act, Public Records Act, State-Owned Enterprises Act, State Sector Act. I mean, how is someone who comes from a background as a foreign exchange dealer and the head of derivatives for Merrill Lynch, supposed to know, okay, I'm now in a different job. Like any new job, you need training. You need to know what it is that guides what covers your job. How do you become familiarised or inducted into knowing what this legislation is? Well, what happened was this very same Wayne Eagleson provided a reply where basically what he did, he didn't answer my question, and then I discover to my... because an Official Information Act request should have a unique identifying number up the top for proper records. There was no such unique identifying Official Information Act number. Then I discover, to my horror, the Chief of Staff for the Prime Minister, the Office of the Prime Minister, is not supposed to answer Official Information Act requests. That's not his job. It's the job of the Department of the Prime Minister and Cabinet. So this is not the first time that Wayne Eagleson has outstepped where he's supposed to, his job and where, what he's supposed to do. So anyway, I'm really going to plug this today and your show. This is the scoop on this because, yeah, in terms of explaining to the public the difference between these two roles, who else is telling the public? Good on you, Vinny.
Thank you, Penny.
Well, hang on, I haven't quite finished yet because
We've got about 50 seconds to wrap up.
I got a reply yesterday from the Privacy Commissioner dealing with my GCSB privacy request, because I think I'm one of the 88 people that's been spied on. And what I didn't know was that anyone that's dealing with Privacy Act requests involving the GCSB, they themselves must have security clearance. So what's happened is the Privacy Act, the Privacy Commission have had a significant number of complaints, and basically this was like an apology letter. Sorry we're taking so long. Please rest assured we are actively investigating your complaint, but it will take time. As soon as I have some issue to report to you, you will receive a telephone call or correspondence from me. But they're still trying to railroad the bill through while a number of us are trying to find out we'll be unlawfully spied on. Not okay. Well,
Penny Bright, ladies and gentlemen, her website is waterpressure.wordpress.com. That's waterpressure.wordpress.com. Easily the most active activist in the country. Always at it, like a dog with a bone, and hopefully she'll chew John Key's leg down to it. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnyessenshow.com. Thank you, Ben.
I got some so-called friends. I'll smile right to my face. All when my back is turned. They like to bury me without a trace. Oh, no, no. Oh, no, no.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio 5 days a week. If you want to listen to archives of the show, they were all available for free at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. If you're just down on the top there, it'll say under radio archives, under the 64K Vinnie Eastwood ones. It should be easy enough to find if you've got some due diligence. And also, if you want commercial-free archives for this program that are uploaded every day with the normal archives, please subscribe for $5 a month, or less, or more, whatever. And we'll keep this operation going, because I really need to be able to get out there, particularly being able to fly around New Zealand to Wellington, Christchurch, things of this nature where big news stories are happening, but I can't cover them because I can't get there, let alone get there in time to cover these types of issues. So we want to really step up this little alternative media operation here and turn it really nationwide instead of just covering Auckland issues. Now, on this radio program, we cover international issues as well, and we have a very special guest now joining us, known as William Donatello, and he was he quit the Ninja Turtles because they just weren't exposing enough scumbaggery for him. William, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny. Good to be here.
Mm-hmm. And you're hailing from the island desert surrounded by alcoholics known as Australia, which is just lovely. We love Aussies on this program. Would you tell us a little bit about who you are, what you do, and what you'd like to talk about?
okay. Basically, I come from a natural health background. That's how I sort of led on to everything that's going on and realising the way the world actually works. I like to call myself a social clinician due to the fact that no formal qualifications, mainly like to learn from personal experience. And, I suppose my big beef these days is the cancer industry and the suppression of natural remedies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, could you explain for the uninitiated, when you say cancer industry, what do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is, the pharmaceutical industry is exactly that, an industry for profit. And in Australia, we have a different sort of setup to America. In America, people pay to have cancer treatment such as chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. So sold options, cut, poison, or burn. In Australia, we have a government-subsidised version of that where it costs a concession card holder or a low-income earner $5.90 to be poisoned and your general patient $36.10 to be poisoned. This is for chemotherapy. So now there's a study published in 97 from the Journal of Clinical Oncology publishing that 97% of all cases, chemotherapy was unsuccessful. And that was in 1997. And still to this day, we have billions of dollars thrown every year at this drug that's proven to be 97% ineffective. While things like hemp oil, for instance, Rick Simpson's hemp oil, that would cost thousands of dollars right now due to the war on drugs. And it's a plant that grows freely in a space of 3 months that everyone could grow.
You can have a number of crops per year with that. The Rick Simpson method employs the use of isopropyl alcohol, on the other hand, which you would have to get from somebody, but that's really, really cheap anyway.
Yes, that's true. And Rick also advocates naphtha, he calls it. In Australia, it's more well known as shellite, and in Europe as benzene, as a solvent to extract the active ingredient from the cannabis plant.
And it's not possible to do it any natural way. In New Zealand, the people employ a method of using ice and water to make what they call bubble hash. Is that effective enough? I wouldn't think so, because you need the pure cannabis oil, don't you?
Yes, I actually believe that extracting via the bubble method, then placing that extraction under heat, should be able to cause the decarboxylation process that it takes to activate the molecules from THC acid into the delta-9 THC chemical.
Okay, go on.
So basically the plant produces THC acid. When it is heat-treated, it goes through a process called decarboxylation, where a molecule from the carbon chain is actually released into CO2. It then rotates the molecule to the delta-9 position, where it fits perfectly into the CB1, CB2 receptor site within every major organ in the human body.
Okay. Well, just think about this for a moment, if you will. This is a very simple process. It's very effective, and it's not prohibitively expensive. Ergo, it should be in every single hospital. And in fact, before cannabis was made illegal in the, what was it, the late 30s, it was in every doctor's bag. It was the plant of choice of healing. And we made a point on the show a couple of days ago that you can't really think of any disease off the top of your head that cannabis oil doesn't cure, or at the very least, help in some way. At the very least, as a pain reliever.
Absolutely. And, I mean, once upon a time, we had to really dig deep to find the results. I mean, Rick Simpson had used this oil to cure thousands of people and so on. And then, you know, there's been Dr. William Courtney, who cured an eight-month-old baby girl of an inoperable brain tumour using the oil, putting it on a dummy 2 times a day. Not that I advocate dummy. And now it's becoming more and more common. Your average Joe is starting to come across these documentaries. Unfortunately, I think the general public still, is very unempowered. They won't take that step and empower themselves and make their own medicine. The concept of making their own medicine is so foreign to people because they're so disempowered. And I believe, Vinny, that it should not be in every doctor's clinic. I think it should be, but it also should be in every person's backyard. It's so easy and so easy to grow, so easy to make, and so effective, you know, that you can keep your family healthy with something that grows so simply, so easily in your backyard or anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, why do you think they call it weed? It's because that's how it grows. It just spreads itself. It grows uncontrollably.
That's true.
The best part about it, this is what I found very interesting about weed, is that you can use every single part of the plant, every single part. Nothing is wasted. I mean, even if you smoke it and it's burned up, it still leaves behind resin that you can still use. And it's like you even after you burn the stuff, it's still useful.
Well, burning the stuff actually does, you know, you are using a lot of the medicinal benefits. You're losing, say, 90% of the medicinal benefits from actually smoking it. There is medicinal benefits still, but if you ingest that after it's been heat treated and converted into THC or Delta-9 THC, then that will give you another 90% more medicinal benefits in your body than smoking it.
Well, so are we talking about vaporizing, where it's up to a couple of hundred degrees Fahrenheit so that it turns into vapor, or what? Is that more medicinally beneficial?
Sorry, ingesting.
Ingesting?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's when you ingest it after it's been heat treated to convert it and decarboxylate it.
Mm-hmm. And I think there was two methodologies. Like the reason why you would smoke it is because it's instant. You get that instant pain relief, and that's why it's really good for people with, conditions that have extreme pain. Whereas in terms of actual healing and actual medicinal benefit, it's far better to ingest it in some way. Would you recommend raw, or is cooking it into like a brownie or a cookie or something okay?
Sorry, the method of extraction into the Rick Simpson oil involves a rice cooker and solvent. So the rice cooker itself will heat treat and convert the THC molecule. And from there, once it's purified, you remove all the solvent. Rick recommends a coffee warmer. I have made the oil many times myself and seen amazing things happen from it. So it's not just hearsay or internet jargon. I've have tried this all myself and seen amazing results. You know, seen diabetes, no insulin for 5 weeks. It was just a trial for 5 weeks. No insulin needed. You know, the young girl grew 3 centimetres, put on 3 kilos, held down a job, went to school. You know, her life significantly improved from consuming this oil. That's ingesting the oil, I find it's a lot more absorbable if it's mixed with some sort of fat, either an animal fat or I like to use virgin coconut oil.
Yeah. What about... excuse me, I'm just kind of a little bit today. But the other thing that I find quite interesting is not only is the oil really effective when you ingest it, but it's also very effective topically. Dr. Bob Malamy showed me these a PDF of a guy who had three tumors in his head, literally lesions coming out of his head. It was the most disgusting thing I've ever freaking seen in my life. My God!
I've seen the photos. It's horrible.
Oh my God. I mean, imagine that on your body and not being able to get rid of it. They wanted to cut off half of his head in order to extract these freaking things. One was like the size of a softball, one the size of a golf ball, and the other the size of a tennis ball coming out of his freaking dome, yo. And what they did is they just rubbed the oil, this really beautiful gold sticky oil, over these lesions, and you see the progression. They get smaller and smaller and smaller and they're gone. And you know what's left? Tiny little indentations on his head, covered over with perfectly new baby-like skin.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, you know, Rick cured thousands of people, but as I said, it's at 2008 when Run from the Cure was released, a documentary that actually put hemp oil on the map and really got it out to the public. In 2008, when it was released, he'd cured thousands of people back then. But like I said, these days, there's so many stories all over the internet. One guy, David Triplett, he actually cured his skin cancer on his nose. And he documented it with photos and made a little 10-minute movie of his own called Cured, A Cannabis Story. And I think he must have been contacted by a few people around the world that had watched his video, used the same method, had success, and decided to let him know about it. So he's made a sequel, which I think is a lot smarter to leave cannabis out of the title. He called the sequel Cured, A Cancer Story, Cured 2, sorry, T-double-O. And it had his story with a bunch of other people's stories as well, and just a little 12-minute rundown on exactly. But it's everything that you need. He tells you what you need to Google, to learn, if you want to empower yourself and learn exactly what's going on, the way it interacts with the human body, the science behind it. There's hundreds of peer-reviewed studies all over the internet now. There's really no reason for anyone to demonize this plant anymore, except for if your financial interests say that you should.
Now, the financial interest side, this is actually what really... to be blunt, really F's me off. Rick Simpson ain't made any money off of this. He'd given away the oil for free, growing it all himself, right?
Absolutely.
Curing heaps of people. It's not that expensive at all, okay?
No, he's not free.
He's not a wealthy man. No. And still, you get these spasmodic, brainless, mindless... zombified, brainwashed pieces of trash out there. He's saying he's doing it for the money. Yeah, right, bro. He's living in poverty and being persecuted by the police and not being able to return home to his home country and traveling the world, getting in big debates with medical schools and things like that, and barely being able to eat or survive sometimes for the money.
That's right. I think
that, are you freaking retarded?
I think the documentary that he released was the only thing that actually stopped Rick from disappearing and never being seen again. To be honest, he probably would have been locked in jail.
Speaking of which, we've got an ad break coming, so we're going to disappear right now. But we will be right back at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Don't you go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking to William Donatello in Australia. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest right at this very moment is known as William Donatello, formerly with the Ninja Turtles. Well, welcome back. And we were talking about Rick Simpson. In fact, I was just messaging Rick to see if he'd want to come on, but unfortunately he left a house just 10 minutes ago, so his girlfriend tells me, so that's unfortunate. But I'll send them a link and an archive to the show anyway, to pop up on their website, because, you know, we're all helping each other in this movement, and essentially if you got some content that is supportive of other people, usually just let them know about it, so at the very least they might be able to spread it. The more content in support of Rick Simpson, the frickin' better, I say. Who knows, might just save a life someday.
Absolutely.
Welcome back. And can I ask you to elucidate, how exactly did you get into this Rick Simpson oil fiesta, if you will? I mean, did you just watch the documentary and then just go, wow, you know what? I'm going to do that.
Yes, that was basically the way it happened for me. But at the same time, I grew up in a Western country in this day and age where a lot of people could relate to this, losing family members from cancer, you know. Grandparents, both my grandparents were taken by cancer. I was lucky to have influences in my life that actually directed me towards preserving your own health and natural health empowerment, rather than whenever you get sick, you know, there's something wrong with me, I better go to the expert, the doctor sort of mentality. And I believe that's another big obstacle that we're facing here is, besides this propaganda about the plant and demonization of it, is they're so well trained to go to an authority outside of themselves and submit to that and hand over their power, rather than being empowered to do their own healing and to make their own medicine. I think that's one of the biggest problems with the hemp oil right now, is people are too scared to do it. And I mean, there's lots of things, lots of reasons what, you know, people can come up with for that. But basically, I think it's fear.
Yeah, well, you know, fear stops a lot of people. I mean, just have a look at the Bradley Manning case, you know. Dude comes out, reveals a whole bunch of documents exposing scumbaggery within the U.S. administration and their war efforts in Iraq and what have you. And so they jail him for the rest of his frickin' life. And so naturally, everybody else who might do the same thing gets really too afraid to do so.
That's right. And I think it's the same thing with me. I wasn't afraid to give it a go, I suppose. I made the oil not long after watching the documentary, because I did know people that had cancer and other ailments that it might help. And I see nothing but success. A lady that I actually made the oil for, she was very, very religious and was told by church authorities that it was evil and against God, and unfortunately only took the oil when the pain got too unbearable as a pain relief, and instead of using it medicinally each day to try and defeat the cancer. So she ended up passing away. Like I said, I lost both grandparents to cancer. A lot of my friends at school at age 19, I lost friends to cancer, 21. It's just all around me, you know, and all around all of us in Western countries these days. People are falling apart with all sorts of illnesses, and you know, cancer is one of the worst ones to watch people go through, especially when they go through the orthodox treatment, you know, the cut, poison, burn avenue that the doctors offer. And in Australia, Vinny, the Minister of Health has said the government will provide $29.7 billion in the 2013-2014 budget to pay chemotherapy providers more money. Now, that is absolute insanity when chemotherapeutic drugs have been proven since 97. This is the 2013-2014 budget. In 97, it was proved that it's 97% ineffective, does not work, you know? Well,
What's the percentage of survival? I heard that the survival rate of it was between 3 and 5% or something like that, would survive 5 years of chemotherapy. And what was it?
3%.
A cure.
97%, it doesn't work. It does not cure. It does not fix people 97% of the time.
See, that's even worse than the placebo effect. They'd be better off just giving them a sugar pill and saying, this cures cancer, bro, just go for your life.
I think that the 3% that make it are them really strong-willed people that have that amazing power of belief. You know, I'm at the doctor.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Feeding me, I'm going to get better. And, you know, the spontaneous, you know, miraculous abilities of the body to heal itself with the power of belief is phenomenal. It's well documented.
I don't know if that's entirely the case with this thing, because it doesn't matter how strong your belief is, a bullet's still going to kill you. And as far as I'm concerned, that's what chemotherapy is. It's an execution. It's a firing squad. But I did meet somebody outside Auckland Hospital when we were protesting about the vitamin C being banned as a use for cancer treatment and to cure swine flu and so on and so forth.
Vitamin C.
Yeah, that's right. And a woman comes out and she says, you know, I did chemotherapy and I was cured. And then it was just like, really? And she goes, yeah, well, I also did homeopathy and naturopathy and a whole bunch of other things. And you go, really? So you did two things that are known to cure cancer and one thing that is known to kill the patient. And you think it's the thing that is known to kill the patient that cured you of the cancer. Is that right?
Look, I have met people as well that have been cancer-free after chemotherapy. You know, I have met people like that, and they're amazing people. The one thing that these people I find in common is their friends always say that while they were looking at this person in the hospital bed, saying they look like death warmed up, their attitude was always, you know, smiling, happy, never give up, nah, I'm getting better, I'm making it through it. That sort of attitude is seems to be a common denominator among people that survive the chemotherapy, but I could not imagine me having a smile on my face if I was suffering like I've seen chemotherapy people receivers suffer.
Yeah, I can't get up the stairs because I'm so dizzy and my skin has turned yellow and I'm puking on myself. Just on my way to get a cup of water from the kitchen. I'm going to survive this. This is great.
Careful.
See,
of the,
it doesn't quite fit. It doesn't quite fit in there.
That's right. Be careful of the acidic urine drops on the toilet seat. Don't sit on them. You know, you'll burn your ass.
It's, you know, like an alien or something.
Exactly.
Speaking of funny, here's a funny story for you. You know how they give you radioactive iodine in the chemotherapy, right? Well, and you'll love this story. Okay, you come out of Natural News. There was a... in New York, they're now putting in radiation detectors in some of the buses as well. So, like, just in case a terrorist that the CIA armed comes into New York and decides to get on a bus with a dirty bomb, that it'll set off the radiation alarm. And what's happening is these alarms have been going off because they're picking up people from the hospital that have been given radioactive iodine. And they give off the same signature of radiation as a dirty bomb. Now that's good for you. That'll cure you, mate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can look at someone before when they're diagnosed with cancer and look at them after the treatment. And they're supposed to look better when you're healing. They look worse. They look like they're dying, you know, after chemotherapy. That's not medicine. For some reason, our logic, our common sense has just completely been thrown out. And, I mean, there's a story, I'm not sure, Vinny, if you're familiar with Cash Hyde?
No.
No? He was a two-year-old boy in America who was born in 2008 and he was diagnosed with brain cancer at a really, really young age, brain tumours. Well, his parents put him right through the chemotherapy and so on and... eventually, they never took him off the chemotherapy, but they started giving him the hemp oil. Now, he recovered, completely made it through the chemotherapy without any chemotherapy drugs other than no painkillers, nothing, just the hemp oil and the chemotherapy. Normally there's a whole cocktail of other drugs that go in with the chemotherapy. He survived for 2 more years. But, I mean, you know, I followed the blog quite a lot because I was really interested. I really wanted to see this beautiful young boy survive. It was a very sad story and made it to the mainstream news in America. But, I mean, they were eating at TGI Fridays and McDonald's and really heavily involved with McDonald's, Ronald McDonald House and all these, you know, foundations and corporations that are just so pro-cancer. And eventually the young boy received, you know, full radiation as well and you know, absolutely tragically passed away in 2012. On the 14th of November, that he had full cranial and spinal radiation, all of the modern treatment, and his parents swear by, you know, they're really, really supportive of the hemp oil.
Yeah. Hey, and what I wanted to do, I'm just going to show the listeners who are watching on the video now something. This is Patrick Swayze before chemotherapy. He's smiling, he's healthy, he's happy. This is Patrick Swayze after chemotherapy, who looks like, for lack of a better word, death.
So basically, a picture of a man with cancer and then a picture of a man that just has the cure for cancer. I mean, according to the Western establishment.
Yeah. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with William Donatello from Australia. Don't you go anywhere, ladies and gentlemen, and please support this broadcast. Go to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and subscribe for $5 a month today. Back in a minute.
Alert the masses!
Everyone's asleep.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And behind me, we have playing some footage that I took, I think, back in 2008 of a cannabis grow operation in Auckland there. And what occurs to me is that you can actually grow quite a significant quantity of cannabis in quite a small place with only a few grow lights. And not only can you grow a decent quantity in a small space, you can also grow decent quality. And this is the reason why I think that the pharmaceutical industry does not like this plant at all, because it is such a massive threat to their domination, basically, of life. William Donatello is my guest. Welcome back. And have you managed to actually grow any of this yourself, or have you just been getting other people to grow it and you're just processing it?
That's correct, yes. I have grown it myself when... You know, the right conditions are there and you're in the right place with privacy. Maybe your neighbours aren't going to dob you in and so on. But unfortunately, everyone's so divided, Vinny, that, you know, if someone looks over your fence and sees a plant, I mean, of all things, it's a plant, it's a herb like any other medicinal herb out there, except for it's better. And it's been demonised, and they will report their neighbour. I mean, you may have babysitted their kids or whatever, but they'll still ring the police and say, listen, this person's growing drugs. So that sort of deters people a lot from growing their own, especially, there's a bit of work if you want to grow indoors as well. The hydroponic setup is a science in itself, just about. I mean, I believe the concepts are very simple. People can grasp it and do it, but, you know, to really grow good quality indoor cannabis, there's an art to it, you know. Some people are passionate about it and love it, and that's the sort of people you need to find and start looking at them as people, not like scumbag drug dealers, because that whole image has been sold to you by someone that wants to sell you poison. I mean, I'm not sure if your American listeners know how it is here in Australia, but we pay a Medicare levy tax every year. Whether you go to the doctors or not, you can completely be responsible for your own health, and you still pay these taxes that go to fund chemotherapy and so on. It costs $5.90 for a concession card holder and 36 cents for the general general patient to receive this chemotherapy. And like I said, the plant grows for free. It grows everywhere. If you chuck seeds out there anywhere on, you know, on a sidewalk sort of thing, they'll pop up between the cracks. It's an amazing, strong plant that just grows anywhere and everywhere. And it's so medicinal and it's free. But it's so demonised that people would dob you in and have you, you know, in trouble with the police and so on for trying to grow your own medicine, be it for your family.
It gives a whole new spin on the phrase, the pot calling the kettle black.
Exactly. But see, why do we look at each other like that? Why do we look at our neighbours like, you know, why do some people look at their neighbours like we got to dob them in? It's because we're so divided, like you said. We just kept banging our heads together all over the place.
Well, they just don't know anything, bro. They're totally brainwashed. Like my uncle, for example, who's a heavy drinker, comes up to me drunk as, scabs a cigarette off me, and then tells me that I'll never amount to anything because I smoke marijuana.
Oh. See, it's just another thing, Vinny, you can slap some people in the face with a stack of peer-reviewed studies of, you know, reputable universities that have shown THC or hemp oil cures cancer, and they still will tell you you're crazy right now because the brainwashing runs so deep. But I really believe it's coming apart because of the younger generations. I mean, the older generations didn't have access to a lot of the information we do these days. You know, and then when this technology came about where they did have access to it, there's only a small percentage of people that were willing to, you know, change, learn with the time. Whereas the younger generation, all over the internet, all the time, learning all about what's going on, raising their kids differently, teaching their kids a different set of morals. The world's changing. I mean, these people that have been feeding us poison for profit for so long, they haven't got long left. I really don't believe that because people aren't going to need them. We might not, you know, there might not be any big revolution or violent revolt, but people will simply walk away. Who's going to need a doctor when you know how to take care of yourself?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. I was speaking to an elderly Māori woman one day, and she was telling me that her grandchild came up to her, you know, like grandchild's like 18, 19 years old. And says, "Grandma, isn't it wonderful? They're building a new hospital in our city." And she says, "You know, that's not wonderful. You know, it would be wonderful is if we didn't need them anymore and started tearing them down."
That's right. Exactly.
There's a lot of wisdom that comes with age. Sometimes you just get even more ignorant as the years go by. And one thing I was thinking about, you know, last night there was a news story released by the New Zealand media. You've heard this phrase before. Kids these days, back in my day, we didn't do any of that. Well, dig this. Here's Auckland University study. High school students in Auckland, New Zealand. They drink less than their predecessors, smoke less than their predecessors, drive less dangerously than their predecessors.
What
kids
does
these days, eh? They're way more responsible than we were.
And they were raised by the same people that said, "You young whippersnaps will never amount to anything."
Exactly. And, the government, of course, says is the reason for this is enormous advertising campaigns that are anti-smoking, anti-drink driving, and anti-getting too drunk. And I think that works, you know. If you brainwash people with a good idea, it actually works, doesn't it? Just like you can brainwash them with a bad idea, like drinking real hardcore is not good, but smoking weed, that's even worse.
It's like, anyone that is familiar with the Ultimate Fighting Championship, I mean, this replay was brought to you by Budweiser. So here you are associating an alcoholic beverage with someone getting knocked out in a replay, in a highlight replay, you know? And Harley Davidson, the only vehicle tough enough to be in the octagon. I mean, what are they, to associate alcohol and riding a motorbike and alcohol and punching someone.
Yeah, you know what I really want to do is go out on the town in Auckland tonight. It's Friday night, right? And then what I'll do, bro, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to go around with my camera looking for people that are getting into fights and stuff like that, you know, just beating each other up and stuff like that. And then I'll come home and I'll edit the video and have the UFC Ultimate Fighting Championship kind of logo coming down the bottom there. And we're like, yeah, Budweiser.
Absolutely. I mean, I love the way George Carlin eloquently put it, you know, at NASCAR, he's got, they're driving past all these signs of the alcohol beverages as well. He said, drink this, drive that, fuck you, they don't care about you.
Oh, we can't say the FU on this broadcast. Unfortunately, we're operating under FCC regulations in a country that has free speech, allegedly.
Excuse that. I thought I heard you split it before, so I thought I'd do it myself.
No, it's a bit of word replacement therapy, so if you want to say the F word, you say frack instead, because fracking is a hell of a lot more offensive than the other word, I think, in my opinion. And if you want to say the S word, you say Shiite Muslim. I was just thinking about this the other day. It's like, you know, US policy towards Muslims. And I was just thinking, what are you trying to do? You're trying to demotivate Muslims from hating you by bombing them. What do you expect? You're going to blow the Shiite out of them?
Yes,
and I unwittingly stumbled upon the real policy.
It's a crazy world we live in. I mean, people don't take into account the fact of our environmental factors as well. I mean, vaccinations, the food that we eat, all these things that do contribute to cancer. Why aren't we learning about this? Why isn't the government educating us about these things? Or at least the information is available, unless you are going to seek it out yourself, then, I mean, I grew up a lot of years in this country eating a really bad diet that no doubt would have led to cancer eventually, you know, and the lifestyle that was just conducive to that, a lot of alcohol, sugars, and a lot of these things that promote the growth of cancer cells. Our Western lifestyle is very, very toxic. When we take into account the vaccines, I mean, you can't go into a public toilet without being sprayed by chemicals, you know, synthetic chemicals. And I believe these things play a massive part, but no one's educated about that. So what are you talking about while they're chewing on a Big Mac?
Oh, they're talking about, I don't know, a McChicken?
What are you McTalking about? Cancer? McCancer?
McCancer. Oh, yeah. Oh, what are you struggling with, mate? I'm struggling with McCancer. So see, this is the thing. It's so crazy. The reality is crazy. And this is my Facebook status from yesterday. If you're reporting the news and you don't sound like a nutcase, then you're not telling the truth.
That's right. That's how crazy it's gotten. The truth is stranger than fiction. I never understood that until, you know, maybe the age of 20, 22 or something. And I went, that's so true. That is so, so true. Truth is stranger than fiction.
I mean, and is another interesting thing. What was it? I think it was Mark Twain. You know how we got all these movies out there where there's like conspiracies to contaminate vaccines and like kill people and bring about one world order and things like that. Look,
yep.
I think it was what's his name? Mark Twain once said that fiction has to make sense, whereas truth doesn't.
Yeah.
That's why they get all of their keys and clues for all of these end of the world movies and so on and so forth from reality, because nothing's crazier.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
The phrase is, you can't make this stuff up. You just can't make it up. It's that frickin' nuts.
That's right. Absolutely, and I mean our leaders that have led us down this path. You know, it's hard to say whether they actually know exactly what they're doing, or are they just as stupid as Joe Public, or what is it? But, yeah, as Plato said, refusing to participate in politics, you know, will end up, you know, having you governed by your inferiors. And that's exactly what's happened. I mean, the general public, you know, has access to information, but the internet now is like global brain that everyone has access to. And there's a lot of, you know, BS on there as well, and there's a lot of good information on there. But for some reason, people still think that we need this government to tell us what's good and what's not. And it's the government that, like I said before, is spending this year $29.7 billion on something that was proven in 1997 to be 97% ineffective. You know, and...
I think you've got it the wrong way around. It was proven to be 97% effective, mate.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Yeah, in getting rid of people once they're past their use-by date, if they're not on the treadmill, you know, they've got themselves unhealthy and sick, they can't exactly work and pay taxes. So it's time to...
Extract what remaining money they have.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And put it in the pockets of the bankers.
That's right.
You know, this whole thing. Like, from birth till death, cradle to grave, we're fracked by the system completely. And the person who organised you to come on, our associate producer Mel, said that you're also very interested in home birth practices and keeping pregnant and birthing mothers out of hospitals because of the enormous amounts of trauma. Would you be able to elucidate and explain a little bit about that? I mean, because this is how we come into the world, and yeah, it sets us up for everything that we're about to experience in life, and it's a great microcosm, I think.
Absolutely. I'm a huge advocate of self-empowerment, you know, and when you look at humanity, I mean, it's debatable how long it's been around for. Some people say millions, thousands, whatever. But all throughout history, we've given birth naturally without the need for all these interventions. Now, in the Western world, it's a proven fact that the more domesticated, the more civilized a culture becomes, the more fear and pain there is associated with birth and birthing children. Now, you can go into indigenous countries these days where ladies still walk off out of the rice fields and give birth to their babies in half an hour, not making a peep, no screaming, no carrying on, and come back with their baby and continue working. You know, and that was human history right throughout, you know, its existence. And somehow we've gotten ourselves to this point where pregnancy is looked at almost like a disease or an ailment, you know, that needs to be cured or treated. And the lady doesn't know how to, you know, she's sort of taught, the pregnant mother is taught that she's not empowered, you know, is unable to do anything about this. You pretty much have to submit to the doctor and, you know, let the professional do his job. And due to that disempowerment, I think women are really depriving themselves of a really sacred birthright. You know, the pinnacle of being a woman is to bring your own creation into the world. It's an amazing, amazing experience when you do it naturally at home. You know, I have a young son that was born at home into my arms, and he's never seen a hospital. He's never seen a stranger standing over him with a mask on, you know, no one trying to intervene, no stress. The foundation for a human being coming into the world in that way, instead of a traumatic hospital entry. The world's leading expert in lighting has said that even the hum from fluorescent globes is enough to send an infant into sensory overload and shock the system. I mean, what's our hospitals full of? Fluorescent globes staring down at newborn children. And the removal from the mothers, the early cutting of the cord, oxygen deprivation can be, you know, a result of that as well. I mean, we cut the cord a lot of the times these days and clamp it before the oxygenated blood has finished pumping into the baby's body. Now, when they've actually done experiments with that too, about immediate cord cutting with baby monkeys, and found that, you know, a really high percentage of the baby monkeys that were subjected to the same treatment that we do to humans were oxygen deprived and brain damaged from it.
Mm. Well, there's a good place to leave it there, ladies and gentlemen. Oxygen deprived and brain damaged as a result. And now we've got to go to deprive you of this radio broadcast. by playing some advertisements so we can pay the bills. We'll be right back at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com with William Donati. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I was just thinking about, like, Jimi Hendrix, There Must Be Some Kind of Way Out of Here, and we're talking about pregnancy. You can't make this stuff up, bro. William Donatello is my very special guest. And, I'm sorry, we were kind of cut off there by the break earlier. And also circumcision. I was just thinking about this. What kind of a lay down, like, this is how your life starts off. Somebody cuts off a chunk of you when you're completely defenseless.
That's right. And not only
what does that imprint you with for the rest of your freaking existence?
Well, you think, Vinny, if that's what we do to our babies as they come out, baby boys, we grab them, we attack their genitalia, then the first thing associated with their sexual organ is a traumatic experience. I mean, sex isn't supposed to be traumatic. Anything that organ is for is not supposed to be something traumatic. So, I mean, are we contributing to some sort of sexual violence by degenerating and cutting up people's genitalia?
Apparently, there's a Australian folk singer who's very dirty called Kevin Bloody Wilson. I'm sure you've heard of him. And now his daughter has come out and she's become a folk singer like her dad, and her name is Jenny Taylor.
Jenny Taylor.
Is
anything like her father? That name,
oh yes. Everything but the beard. Well, I say that, but I don't actually know.
Are you familiar with Rodney Rood as well from Australia?
I am. I've heard of him, but unfortunately I haven't consumed any of his content. But my friend Jared is he introduced me to Kevin Bloody Wilson and what are their names? Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, Derek and Clive, and a whole bunch of other really dirty comedy kind of stuff. And it's just brilliant.
Yeah,
really?
Absolutely. Well, you guys have got Flight of the Conchords out of New Zealand. They're brilliant.
They're not dirty, though.
No, they're not dirty. Well, innuendo.
Yeah, but who's endo? And in who?
That's right. So I wanted to just quickly get back on the topic of the natural birthing as well, and the birthing at home, the self-empowerment, Vinny. If you don't mind, that's one thing I want to make clear as well is in a hospital environment, I mean, with the disempowerment and the authority of the doctor and so on, can actually, lead mothers to feel quite scared, and it seems to be an environment that arises a lot in a birthing situation in a hospital, whether it's the midwives, nurses, doctors, but generally a feeling of, of fear is quite easy to come into. When that is experienced by the mother, the biochemistry of the mother goes into adrenaline, fight or flight. So the blood pumps into the arms and legs and the extremities so that the mother can, fight or run away from a tiger or whatever it is that we're supposed to have this fear for. Instead of the natural oxytocin, which is the love hormone that's released when the mother is relaxed, and what that causes is the body actually pumps the blood all into the uterus, the muscle that needs to do all the work to give birth to the baby. So if mothers are scared and they're kicking and screaming, the blood is in their arms and legs and they're not prepared, for birth, then there's a much higher chance of intervention and so on.
Well, the... Just recently, my girlfriend's brother's baby was born, And his wife had it at home in the bath, the water birth. Less than an hour, no screaming, no worries, healthy baby.
Beautiful. That's a great story, Vinny. I'm glad to hear that, mate. It's good to see more and more people taking that responsibility into their own hands, you know?
Well, you know what happens? Have you ever been in a situation where people are telling you this, that, and the other, you've got to do such and such and blah, 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 and you have no idea what they're talking about, and you get really confused, and as a result of being confused, you kind of get a little bit scared, a little bit apprehensive?
Yes.
That's hospitals in a frickin' nutshell, isn't it?
I think what it is it's an intellectual intimidation. I mean, people go into a doctor's clinic, and that person's gone to school. I mean, they know how to use big words and all this sort of stuff. So people feel intellectually inferior to the doctor. And the truth is, he's only a human that's just been trained. He's gone to another form of schooling that was funded by the pharmaceutical industry and learnt what they told him. He made it there because he swallowed it blindly without ever questioning it. And look, there's a lot of really good doctors out there too that are wide awake, that know exactly what's going on. I mean, my family doctor, everyone knows you need one these days, not for your health, but just for the, you know, forms and whatever else. Sometimes you need a doctor whether you want to get a day off work or whatever. He admits that, there's a lot of doctors in the clinic that get their lunch paid for every day by pharmaceutical companies. They have conferences overseas, might be near Disneyland or something, all expenses paid, and it's a conference where them and their family get to go in the holidays. Now, all these things are funded by the drug companies, the same as the universities that they were educated at. So basically, people teach themselves or learn about how to look after their own health, they actually start to learn these big words that doctors know and use anyway, and you're not so intimidated, you know. And when you can hold your own with a doctor, you'll actually find that a lot of the times you'll gain respect or you'll get their anger, which shows what an immature, ridiculous human being they are, you know, to be placed in a position of authority and so, you know, not in control of their emotions and reactions.
Did you know that if you have the letters MD after your name, you are 11 times more likely, wait for it, to be a serial killer?
There you go. I did not know that.
And it makes a hell of a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I think maybe the MD's for murder, death or something.
Yeah, MDK, murder, death, kill.
And indeed, the
New Zealand Ministry of Health reported that it is the third leading cause of death in New Zealand. On its own website, it admits it. We kill three times as many people as the road toll, okay? You're three times more likely to be killed by your doctor, even according to officialdom, than you are to die in a car accident. And that's not including all of the unreported deaths. Vaccine reactions, chemotherapy, which kills people. They don't include any of that. This is just things that are known medical mishaps that are actually reported on. So if you add everything else on there, the institution called the Ministry of Health in New Zealand that is supposed to keep you alive and healthy is in fact the thing that is most likely to kill you than any other factor. And I would act under the assumption, based upon the same model that the United States, England, and Australia uses to a large degree, the medical practice, they're virtually identical. I would assume that globally, doctors are the world's biggest killers. Now, this sounds completely crazy. You know why it sounds completely crazy, ladies and gentlemen? Because it's a fact. If it didn't sound crazy, it probably wasn't true.
That's right. Yeah, you could not make that up, could you? The guys that are there to look after your health are the most likely to kill you.
And just like there's awful lots of terrorism suppression or surveillance legislation being passed. Now, we were discussing this with Penny Bright in the first segment, right?
Yep.
And I said to her, look, Penny, the reason why... they're surveilling, the state is trying to surveil everybody, isn't to protect everybody from the terrorists, it's to protect the terrorist state from the people.
That's right.
You know, and this is my main philosophy in life, William, is that anything that comes out of officialdom, firstly, assume that they're saying the direct opposite. We're doing this for your safety. Okay, they must be doing it to try and kill me or enslave me.
Well, I mean, to work in the medical industry today, and, you know, any man that or woman that you know, got access to their own processes of logic have to work it out. So that means if you continue to be a doctor when you, I mean, say you've treated 10 patients for cancer and you've seen them all deteriorate and die, I mean, does it take a degree of misogyny to, you know, misogynism to actually stay in that line of work? Would you continue a job where you've just killed 10 people and watched them lose their hair and, you know, and seen all their relatives come in and you know, getting emotional and all that kind of thing? Would you be able to continue to administer chemotherapy yourself, Vinny?
It depends whether or not I was afraid of admitting to myself these three words that are necessary for personal growth in life. I was wrong.
That's right. That's right. And that's where, look, the government itself, they're not about to say that by the looks of things. But, I mean, that's the big thing that people would have to grasp, you know. If people to find out about hemp oil curing cancer and this and that, I mean, they have to change their whole entire paradigm, you know. It's such a big mind switch to go, hang on a second, this system is not looking after me. You know, all my life I've been trained to down the running wheel, go to work, pay my taxes, be a good little working citizen. But this is what I've got in return as a public health service from my government. It's a massive thing to admit, and it's, you know, it can be terrifying and life-changing. And I don't blame a lot of people for turning away from the information, but basically if you're going to turn away from the information that's, you know, jumping up from the people that love you and care about you around you, or on the internet, people spreading this stuff because they've cured their family member or whatever, then, I mean, you don't, you know, I shouldn't say you don't deserve to live, but you're not desperate enough to keep, you know, to stay alive, obviously.
Well, I think you really have to have a traumatic experience before you radically change direction, you know. Yes. You know, before I got arrested for selling cannabis when I was in university, and who doesn't, you know, got caught with 13 grams of it, and I had to do 300 hours community service, and I was lucky that I didn't go to jail for up to 8 years, when the person in front of me was growing cannabis, resisted arrest, and was convicted of sexual assault, got 150 hours community service. Had I not been made fun of by the police, had they not made up evidence even after I gave them a full confession, had I not suffered so much trauma that I found it difficult to walk up a flight of stairs because my legs were giving out on me because I was crying so much, had I not had that experience, I would not have benefited from that suffering.
Yeah.
If you take suffering as a gift and then you turn it into something good, if you make your life meaningful again after all the meaning has been stripped away from it.
Absolutely.
That's alchemy.
Yep. See, and it's a hard process, Vinny. It's a very hard process to go through. I mean, I know ex-police officers that are dying of cancer right now. And could you imagine their career they spent, you know, locking people up, busting, prosecuting for marijuana, and for them to have to switch and go, oh my gosh, I have done that for a living, you know, and I've been praised and upheld in my society by the people in the community for doing that. And now I realise that, you know, I've just been doing putting people in jail for growing the cure for cancer. I mean, the whole paradigm and mindset is changing culturally towards this plant and what have you. But for them, people that have worked in a career like that, to make that big mind flip, it's a very, very hard process.
Well,
very
you don't...
rewarding process, mind you. Very, very rewarding process once you've actually made them realizations. But it's huge, Vinny.
Oh yeah. I mean, your whole life gets turned upside down, and really it must.
Yeah, it'll set you free, but first it'll really piss you off.
Yeah, I mean, the worse you feel, the better it is for you in general. I mean, of course, unless you're suffering under chemotherapy. In that case, the worse you feel, the worse it is for you.
or radiation.
Yeah. I mean, through life, this is what is happening. That I believe is a really bad trend in society. People are trying to avoid suffering and pain.
Yeah.
I actively try and seek it out because I know that within suffering, within pain, there are the most important lessons in life. If you haven't suffered in order to gain the knowledge that you have gotten, then the knowledge that you have gotten is probably worthless and not true at all.
Absolutely. See, the path of love, simply, I mean, you love and care about the people around you, Vinny. You make it your business to, I mean, if someone gets sick with something, you learn. I mean, there's natural remedies for absolutely everything on this planet, and you learn about them and you implement them. And now, the path of fear will lead you, handing your power to the doctors, and you're going to die.
Yeah, indeed. And actually, here's an interesting side note, complete tangent. They've just done some tests on some psychopathic killers in a prison and shown them really horrible things and what have you, and asked them to try and imagine what they feel. And they actually started to get emotions response from them. We'll be right back.
Just in time, head down the 405. Gotta meet the new boss by 8 a.m. The phone rings in the car. The wife is working hard. She's running late tonight again. Well, I know what I've been told. You gotta work to feed the soul. Can't do this all on my own. No, I know I'm no Superman.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinny Eastwood Show. I'm no Superman, except when I see David Rockefeller, because then laser beams shoot out of my eyes and burn him to a crisp. My very special guest is William, known only as William Donatello. And here's the thing. A journalist is like a chef. You can't reveal your sources, right? I just want people to know that. You know, if I'm telling you something and you ask me, who told you that or whatever, and I say, well, just one of my sources, I can't reveal who it is, it doesn't mean that the source is not credible. You're going to actually the information usually is very, very credible, except this person that probably has a whole lot to lose by coming out and revealing themselves publicly, like, for example, having their children kidnapped by the state. Do you understand? That's why journalists don't reveal their sources, because then their sources will feel that you've betrayed their confidence and they won't reveal anything to you again. Not to mention, their lives will be destroyed and it will be your fault if you reveal who it was. Okay? Just wanted to let people know that, just in case they think there's any form of mistransparency. You know, it's the same thing with people from Anonymous who come out wearing masks. A lot of people are saying, oh, these people are wearing masks, therefore we can't trust them or whatever. Just look at the information that they're telling you, mate, okay? You know that they're telling the truth because it checks out, regardless of whether or not you know who's saying it behind that mask.
That's right.
All right, so, William, you're back, are you?
Absolutely. I'm here, Vinny.
All right. What do you feel about that statement I just made there?
I think you're absolutely correct, and it's just, I mean, I can understand people feeling, hesitant about people that don't want to reveal their true name. But, I mean, you know, people, we're families, we're fathers, we're mothers, we're sons and daughters. We care, you know, we're just people, but we've been trained to totally ignore that. I mean, there's people out there that are posting videos of, you know, themselves curing their cancer with this illegal drug in our country, you know, that been demonized for so long, yet people won't trust that. They'd prefer to trust the authorities and the system and what they say. They'll watch the nightly news and believe every word of it, yet somehow we've been trained to not trust your neighbour next door that, you know, that's just cured themselves of cancer or a friend of cancer or whatever. It's a strange world, Finny, but unfortunately people have to remain anonymous to protect themselves, you know? I mean, you don't go on the air saying, I've just made the cure for cancer, when you know they'd try to lock you in jail for doing that.
Well, and this is indeed when you know for a fact that they will lock you in jail for doing it, because that's everybody right. who comes out and says that they've done this gets locked in jail.
That's right. And you know what? Joe Public, that will sit there and judge you for being anonymous, isn't going to come running and say, you know what, I'm not going to work today because you locked that guy in jail for doing a good thing. You know, they don't do that. They don't stop. You know, the system. They don't stop paying taxes. They don't go on protest. They're not going to care. You know, people that do care and want to help each other out, they're the ones that are going to get crucified, mate. If you famous under Mao Zedong, you know, it was the majority of Chinese people that done what they're told were fine. You know, there was millions massacred, but they were all the people that wanted to, you know, exercise their freedoms, their rights.
Well, the ones who exercise their freedoms, their rights, and you know what? We don't actually have any freedom, and we don't have any rights.
That's right.
Save there are actually three rights, that were guaranteed.
And that's built into the Australian culture as well, Vinny. I'm not sure about the New Zealand, but it seems to be built into the Australian culture that it's almost, you know, a consensus that, yep, that's the way it is.
Yeah. I mean, you've got three rights that are guaranteed. Guaranteed, okay? It's not written down, but these are your rights. Put up, shut up, or pay up.
Right.
All right. All the rest you have to take by force.
Okay. Absolutely.
Now, force is defined under the Patriot Act as using your voice, using published material, or using physical force. All right. You really do have to take your rights by force. If you don't defend those rights that you think you have, you really don't have them at all.
That's right. Yeah. That's why a big interest of the government's to disarm any population. You look at any dictator right throughout history has always disarmed the public.
Well, they don't disarm them right away. They disarm them just before they exterminate them.
Yes.
I mean, Nazi Germany, first group of people to be discriminated against through legislation in Nazi Germany were homeschoolers. And then when everybody got indoctrinated into the mandatory public schooling, the very last group of people that they passed a law discriminating against were gun owners. And then they were able to exterminate them because they had a whole bunch of brainwashed kids
Absolutely.
To do their work for them.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the work of Rudolf Steiner. He was an amazing man with brilliant research. And you know, he could have really contributed, I believe, to humanity in positive ways with what he came up with. You know, he studies in his field of research. During the Nazi times, he was, you know, he was hunted pretty much. I mean, there was a war on Steiner.
And practically painted a target on his back, you know.
That's right, yeah. And what was he doing? Improving children, making life better.
Well, making them less susceptible to mind control. And do you know what the word government means in the Latin?
Yeah, it's to control the mind or to guide or steer.
Yeah. Basically, govern means control and ment means mind. So the word government, mind control.
That's right. Yeah, it comes from gubernari and mentis.
So has anybody else here been to a government school? You've been to a mind control school. Has anybody here ever listened to a government media? It's mind control media. Have you ever been to a government hospital? Mind control hospital. Come on!
Yep.
Wake up! They're putting it right there in front of you.
Yeah. But see, Vinny, I believe this waking up is a personal thing. It's a personal realization that people need to come to, and that's what's going to defeat this whole, you know, BS that we've had to, well, we thought we've had to worry about for such a long time. I mean, our natural instinct when we care for each other and we love our families and so on, we want to be healthy, we want to be happy, These are the things, if you follow your heart, that are going to lead you to become self-empowered, because you have to, you know, you have to just to survive and to live healthy and without pain and suffering these days. That's just part of the parcel.
You're precisely correct. And, you know, the one thing that really frustrates me out of all things, out of all human behavior at the moment, is the people who are good people who think that people are bad, that we're a cancer on this world, that people don't care about each other. They've lost their faith in humanity. Whereas if they were only to go out their door and ask their neighbor for a cup of sugar or something like that, they'd realize that their neighbor is a nice person who would give them that cup of sugar, even if it was their last cup.
Benny, I'd never realized the program that had been in my head. I'd see big islanders or Maori-looking people earlier in life, and because they're naturally got a big physical, you know, stature, they're big in size, and some of them might have tattoos or whatever, automatically that the brain will label them as, you know, once for warrior sort of style, nasty things. And you talk to them people, and all of a sudden, hey, bro, how are you, man? You know, they got the most beautiful, soft voices. They're, you know, they're funny. They're full of jokes and laughter. They're really family-orientated people. And, you know, it's just a program that's in our heads. What we need to do is break down our own personal programs. And the biggest program that needs to come down, I believe, is the authority. I mean, there's no such thing as authority. You are the authority on your life. You make every single decision and you reap the consequences. You know, and if you've got good intentions, then no one around you is going to want to even stop what you're doing.
It's precisely true. And I was just thinking about that yesterday, actually. It's funny you should mention that, about how well I get along with Maoris. And I was just thinking about, man, I actually have a lot more fun with Maoris than I do with most people.
Yeah.
Because, as you said, They're laughing a large majority of the time, making jokes and actually having fun. And what's interesting is they also are far more generous. They have a lot less than most people, but they give you what they have. And you see people who are like billionaires, millionaires, or whatever, who keep it all to themselves when to give somebody $10 on the street would cost nothing. Whereas I've met Maori people who have, nothing, and that's able to give something. You know, it's extraordinary how badly demonized these people are.
And that's not just the Maoris or anything either. I mean, you go traveling anywhere, the Philippines, you know, I've traveled quite a lot to third world countries, and these communal cultures, the Chilean culture, South American, you know, Latin America, they're beautiful, beautiful people that really, you know, their foundation is their family. They have no age segregation. I mean, their young children interact with 70-year-olds as well as 30-year-olds. And, you know, it's a beautiful dynamic. But the Western mind wants to judge that program built into it as well.
It wants to separate us from each other.
Yeah.
And I think it was the Mayans who said, I am you, another me, or something to that regard, you know. Everybody is really, in a lot of ways, a reflection of yourself. Even psychopathic scumbags reflect some of the worst part of yourself. And unless you acknowledge that those parts exist, you're going to lead yourself into trouble. William Donatello, thank you very much for your time and your wisdom on all of this, mate.
Thank you very much. It is. Been great.
All right. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen. Please, by all means, if you support this broadcast, if you listen to it, go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and subscribe today for $5 a month. Please do it. We'll be right back.